All right, guys, welcome to the show. It is Friday, January 27th.
Seventh.
What did I say?
27th.
Friday, January 7th.
2021. 22. Fuck. This
is a mess. 1-7-22. There we go.
Yeah.
It's 4:50 in the evening, and this is episode. What number episode are we on?
5, 7.
This is the newest episode of Chicken Tenders, mm-hmm. coming at you from the nonstop rainy hills of Northwest Oregon.
Forest hills.
We're from the woods.
Woody hills.
Yeah, wooded hills. How's everything going with you, Emily?
Good. Today has been one of those days where we don't have anything super specific that we have to do, but just trying to get stuff done. Feels good.
I had specific stuff to do, but
what'd you do?
You were asleep when that was all happening.
What'd you do?
Well, I got firewood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I took care of the chickens.
I do that every day.
Sort of. Yeah. So, how's everything been with you?
Everything's good. Business is booming. And you got new glasses, which look great.
Yeah, I got some new glasses finally. Sucked it up. Had to wear a mask to go get a eye exam. Did it. And I'm really happy they work well.
Well, because last time you went there like a year ago to get an eye exam, you refused to wear your mask and you got kicked out, right?
Yeah.
So here we are with your glasses.
I didn't get kicked out. I left on my own volition.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, today has been really rainy. We tried to figure out where all the water is kind of flowing down towards the house from, or if it's just coming down the slope. And I think there's like a, we decided we think there's a weird kind of spring coming out of the ground, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but there's water flowing down the driveway into the basement, and it's getting into the basement and in the foundation. So it's not good. So at some point we're going to have to get a French drain in. I wish I could do it myself. I don't have an excavator. We're calling around trying to see if there's somebody that can help us out.
And we realized it's like a landscaper's job rather than, I don't know, plumbers or basement people.
Yeah. But yeah, hopefully we get that done. But do you want to plug your business?
No.
No. Okay. Guys, we are available at chickentenderspod@protonmail.com. Haven't got any emails in a while, so if you would like to talk to us, you can reach us there or at the Deborah Gets Red Pilled email as well. And you can buy us, you can give us some donations to buy farm equipment that we desperately need, chicken feed. What else do we need? Tractor implements, corrugated pipe for French drains, piles of gravel. All sorts of stuff.
Oh, we also found that there's way more garbage buried under the ground on our land than we thought.
Well, we don't know for sure, but we think that's probably what it is. We found a buried garbage pile in the pasture, probably.
Oh, and we have a wild Wilma update.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Weekly Wilma update.
Weekly Wilma update.
Yeah.
www.wildwilmaweekly.update.
Yeah.
Okay, you tell everybody what happened today.
Well, Wilma was bad. She ate like a quarter loaf of sourdough bread that I made.
So
off the counter.
Adam's been making sourdough.
She's done that twice now.
But also, as a side note, Adam's making sourdough in our smoker because our oven is, we don't have an oven. So that's pretty impressive. And it's a labor of love. And even more, you have even more pride for the loaves that you've
Yeah, I don't have an oven, so I had to bake them in a pellet smoker.
Pellet smoker, yeah, which is a labor of love. And then Wilma just eats it off the counter. She's so naughty. She just can't help herself. She's a glutton for gluten.
Wow, that's pretty good. Glad you found that so entertaining.
I came up with that as I was saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she got in big trouble today and had to get, she got locked outside and she got spanked. So.
Yeah. And she feels bad, but it doesn't stop her from doing other bad things. She's, but like, we love her so much and I wouldn't change anything about her.
No.
She keeps us on our toes. But she also, so we were walking around looking at different stuff on the land because it looks different right now from all the snow. The weight of the snow kind of pushed brush down so we can see all the garbage coming out of the ground better. And
there's not a lot of garbage, just one big pile.
It's like wood coming out, wood that's been buried, but it's also useful stuff like fencing.
Yeah.
That blackberry bushes have grown around and kind of hidden. But yeah, so Wilma was in the barn chasing vermin and we decided to walk to another part of the property, like down the driveway anyway.
The second pasture.
So we left Wilma, closed the gate. And then all of a sudden we're like 150 yards away and Wilma's there with us all of a sudden, just out of nowhere. And thankfully we were there to see her running away beyond the kind of gated fenced area of the land. So we brought her back in, closed the gate, got on the other side of it, and then tried to get her to come towards us so that we could figure how she escaped. And she just very easily shimmied her fat little body.
She's not fat. She's very muscular.
Well, I mean it in a like a nice way, like a, she's like a chunky baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she shimmied her muscular chubby body up the gate and through like over the top of it in a really weird way. And now we know that she can escape. Yeah. But she never does it if we're not there to run towards.
She escaped because she wanted to be with us. Right. She stays in because she wants to be with us.
Right.
So.
So that's that.
Yeah.
She also ate some butter off the counter and
yeah, she didn't want to eat her bread by itself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really it though, right?
Yeah, that's it for Wilma.
Oh, but we have a mystery with our kefir.
What's the mystery?
That we can only do one batch at a time.
Yeah, one. It's pretty cold here, so the kefir, only I usually ferment two jars of it at once, and only one is fermenting right now. So we're thinking that it's taking all the wild yeast out of the air to, I don't know. I don't really know the science behind it, but only
one. That's our theory, but if you guys have theories, we want to hear them because we don't know why we can't do two jars at once when we clearly have enough kefir grains.
Right.
Like, it's not that the proportion is wrong. It's just that whenever there's two jars, it doesn't go.
Yeah.
And we don't know why. But yeah. Want to talk about our guest or what do we do now?
Well, we could talk. Our guest isn't here yet. So what are your big plans for the new year? Your goals, your resolutions, anything?
I just want to make money so we can set up our property and then not have to make so much money, like once we're set up, and have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep enjoying life.
Are you enjoying your life?
Yeah, I mean, I have freak outs every here and there. You see me crying almost daily. How often do I cry? Maybe twice a week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Twice a week crying. Maybe if we could get that down to one.
Yeah.
One time a week, that would be good.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I cry tears of joy because I'm like overwhelmed by stuff too. So maybe just cut out the sad crying to once a month and keep one crying phase spell a week to happy tears.
Yeah. You have like anger tears a lot directed at me.
When I'm frustrated with you.
Yeah.
Not a lot. How you cry once in a while. Why don't you talk a little bit about your kind of style of cry?
I haven't cried in a while, I don't think.
You cried when we watched that show, Love on the Spectrum.
I don't remember that. I don't think I did.
I clearly remember you cried in the finale when that guy with autism cried or found love. You cried.
Okay, I don't remember that.
Oh, I sincerely remember it. I've talked about it multiple times since then with other people we know because I found it so touching.
Yeah. Sometimes things make me sad, like child trafficking and elite satanic pedophilia.
Yeah.
So that makes me sad and cry sometimes. Sometimes I cry when I'm happy in movies. I've been known to cry when I look at Wilma sometimes because she's so beautiful.
Yeah, and I've been known to be a little jealous in those moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else in this extremely unorganized, unproductive intro we just did? Is this
really boring?
I don't know.
For other people?
I don't know. We'll probably have to check the download numbers. Maybe we should clean it up a little bit for the next time.
Okay. It's just hard to know like what's boring to other people. It might be really, it might only be fun to us because it's our life.
Yeah, but I mean, not that many people are listening anyway, so who really cares if we're having a good time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Our guest is here. Let's pause. We'll be back in a minute. All right, guys, we're back, and we're here with our guest this week, who is our good friend, Sylvia.
Chosen family, I'd say.
Yeah. How's it going, Sylvia?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing really well. We're really happy that you're here. Are you nervous to talk with us?
No, I love talking with you guys. I think you're some of my favorite people to talk with. So.
Yeah, you're one of our favorite people.
We talk about how much we like you all the time.
Yeah.
Same here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So should I
start? Yeah, why don't you lead the conversation?
Okay, we have some questions, but we'll just see where it goes. We thought we'd start with like, can you tell us a little bit about your...
Well, let's say we could start out by saying we met you in the Freedom Cells group that we were going to last year that didn't end up being really what we were looking for, but we met the people that we really connected with there and are friends with a few different couples and groups of people, and not very many though, and you were one of the ones that
you showed up on time.
Yeah,
and we were surprised
when we had our underground farmers market at our place.
Yeah,
kind of our Christmas one. You were the first one to show up. That was before
like 3 hours early or something like that.
That was before we knew you, and it was really awesome to have you there. And you gave us at that time a sourdough starter.
Yeah,
you gifted it to us, and I didn't know what to do with it.
We didn't use it.
Yeah, but since then you've given me another one, and it is actually in progress right now. So
very cool.
Yeah.
How did your bread taste last time you made it?
Oh, it was really good. I was pleasantly surprised because I kind of screwed up and had to FaceTime with you to get some stuff cleared up, but but it ended up working, and for cooking it for my first time and making it on a barbecue, it worked out as good as possible, I think. So.
Nice. It looked good from the pictures that I saw.
Yeah. Wilma really enjoyed it. She ate about half of each loaf twice off the counter.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's bad. Okay. So we got that out of the way. So you want to do the questions?
Yeah. So we were thinking you could tell us a little bit about your story, like how you got started down the road to self-sufficiency.
Yeah. It's been a convoluted road. Way back when, I actually went to school for sustainable agriculture in like the late 90s in Maine. And then I stuck around Maine for a while and worked on some farms there growing organic veggies. So that was like my first start, I guess. And then from there, I took a very long windy road sort of away from all of that and ended up in Portland. And that's where we started growing veggies again in our backyard. I had had gardens all the way up until then, but they were either on somebody else's land or in like community gardens. And it just, it wasn't very, didn't work out. So when we got to Portland, we had like about a third of an acre. And so we put in a giant vegetable garden, and learning how to garden in the Pacific Northwest was a little different than what I had done on the East Coast. So that was a little bit of a learning curve, but a lot of fun. And so each year we sort of added more to the garden. We kind of like, I guess, yeah, just made it bigger and bigger each year as we succeeded. And by the end, we had like gotten rid of the front lawn and started growing like a ton of potatoes for storage through the winter. And we realized like, okay, we've outgrown this place and we need something bigger, because it just kept being fun and we just kept growing more and more stuff. Mm-hmm. And it sort of, it coincided also with, you know, the whole fiasco that went down in 2020. And we realized in 2020 that we did not want to be in a city anymore. So all that sort of like led up to that moment where we were like, let's get out of here. Let's buy a farm. Let's buy something bigger. And so we started searching for properties. It took a long time to find something that was within our budget that was affordable, and and it was the kind of thing that we were looking for. So then we found this place, and that's how we ended up here. And yeah, so we both, we being my husband and I, we both went part-time in our jobs and just started homesteading, trying to do as much as we can for ourselves and stop relying as much on, you know, bot inputs.
So how, I feel like you knew before, definitely before us, but before a lot of people, it seems like you knew that getting out of the city was what you needed to do. How, why do you think you caught on to that and knew so early on?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Or was it more just like you were literally outgrowing the land?
I think it was a combination of both. I think when this whole fiasco started in 2020, I think both of us, my husband and I, both kind of smelled something fishy. And we were like, this is kind of weird. And we were like, well, it'll blow over, right? We were like, yeah, it'll be fine. But then in May, I guess 3 months into it, when it hadn't blown over, that's when we were like, okay, this is something different. This is not something that we want to be part of. And it didn't look like it was going to end anytime soon. It looked like it was going to be a long game. And we felt like being in the city wasn't necessarily the right thing to sort of sit this one out. Like, neither of us wanted anything to do with the like whole injection thing or any of that. So we were like, where can we sit this out in such a way that there's like the least amount of impact?
Mm-hmm. So what's your long game? Use that term.
So. Yeah. Our long game here is to try to move towards as much self-sufficiency as possible.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause right now, I think you seem pretty self-sufficient. You're getting groceries, what, once a month, right?
Yep, once a month.
And that's our goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we could level that up even more. Like right now, we're buying in things such as like dairy products, oils, certain grains. We are growing a lot of our food that we eat. We have, you know, year-round greens. So we have year-round nutrition. We have squash, potatoes, and corn sort of for the grain calories. We've got eggs from chickens and ducks. So a lot of our meals consist of stuff that we've grown, but I feel like we could level that up some more, grow a little bit more of our own grains, and maybe get some dairy, probably some dairy goats, which would also come
instead of cows,
probably.
Because don't you like cream in your tea?
I do love cream. And I saw this milking cow on Craigslist one time.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, we could get this milking cow, right? And so I left it up for Coulter to see on Craigslist. Wow. And he came in and he was like, no cows.
I was like, really?
Yeah, he wasn't into the cow. So
how long ago was that?
Midsummer.
I think I want a cow more than milking goats.
Yeah.
Because the goat's milk is so sour. Like, would you put that in your tea? I would not.
Yeah. I mean, goat's milk is pretty intense. Yeah. I don't know if I would put it in my coffee or tea. Unless it was like, I don't know. We've been talking to some like folks that have goats, and they said what you feed them makes a huge difference in terms of like having an off taste.
So, oh, I wonder if the goat's milk we used was maybe they were being fed Sour Patch Kids and lemonade. And that's why it was so sour. We just
gave them lemon slices and and sour things.
Yeah,
they were saying if they eat a lot of weeds, that can give the milk an off taste.
Yeah. Interesting.
I have no experience with it, but I'm willing to try and see if there's any, you know, if there's anything we can make with it, even if it's just like goat cheese or something. I do like goat cheese.
Have you made any kefir with the grains we gave you?
I haven't yet. I haven't actually been to a grocery store to buy milk. So I haven't done it yet. Yeah. But I'm very excited.
Yeah. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, we're having a little bit of trouble right now because the temperature in the house has gone down, so it's not fermenting quite as well.
It's like 40 degrees in our house sometimes.
Yeah, it's pretty cold.
Did you guys run out of wood or something?
When I tell people that, they're like shocked. What'd you say?
Did you run out of wood or something?
No, but all our windows are single paned and broken, and our doors have gaps. And
it's more than 40 degrees when the fire is going, but sometimes, like when it goes out overnight, it's pretty cold in the morning. And then if I get home from work and nobody's been here all day, it's cold. It's definitely
it's not normal.
It's definitely like moving out here has been it's like a wake up call, because I get home from work, it takes me over an hour to get home from work. So I get home in the dark, like it's pitch black here. There's I get no home at six. Lights, I have to I step in the mud to open the gate, get in here. And then I have to like go out to the barn, which is far away from the house, get wood, go start a fire. And it's definitely like the work never ends. You know, I remember sitting in our old house in Milwaukee, just looking at houses and our property and thinking, you know, as soon as I get out of the suburbs and into a homestead, everything's going to be perfect and it's going to be great. And then all this stress that I feel living here is going to go away. And it's a different version of it. And every time I walk around the house and find a big pile of trash or like a hole that the old owner dug in the ground to burn.
Not house, on the land. Yeah. We don't have trash in our house.
The old owner dug a hole to burn like toxic stuff in our pasture. You know, it's just and then I remember talking to you about it when I was down there for Christmas, and I was saying how I was like feeling anxiety about the spring coming up and how much work it was going to be to plant a garden and have sheep and do all this crazy stuff that I've planned. And you said you just need to slow down, and maybe this year you guys just do the garden, you know, do one thing at a time. So I think that's what we're planning on doing. When you guys moved in, what was the first thing that you did to get into the mode of growing food and doing all that stuff?
Yeah, the first thing we did was we hired a tractor guy to come plow up a piece of the land, and then we put in a big deer fence. So it was like I would say he plowed up about maybe like a quarter acre, and then the fence that we put in is 60 by 100, so pretty big.
And that, so that's the first plowing thing. The land, was it all grass over there or like stuff? So plowing the land makes it so that you can put vegetables straight into it.
Yeah.
Is that the point of it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the first thing we did.
Yeah. We're going to do 40. We measured out 40 by 100. We put red clover down, like you told us to.
But we waited too long, I think.
Yeah. So it's sitting.
That's all right.
Sitting in standing water, so as soon as it dries out a little bit, maybe in the springtime it'll start to come up, but I think it's gonna be okay. But
a friend here
I saw
yeah, we've got one look at here. Yeah, we don't have a rototiller tiller for the tractor that we got, but I have a little one that I can hook up to the riding mower. So I'm going to see how that works. And if not, maybe we'll call the neighbor and see if they have an implement we can borrow or something like that.
Yeah.
I bet they do.
There's somebody like kind of further down our road who has just a cardboard sign, or maybe it's a painted wood sign that says like, we have an excavator or something like that.
Yeah. So there's definitely people around us that can help.
How'd you find your tractor guy?
Craigslist.
Oh, okay.
Craigslist is best for farm stuff.
Yeah.
I just bought a whole pig from Craigslist.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy was like the happiest tractor guy I'd ever seen. He showed up and he was like out there sitting on his tractor with a huge grin on his face the whole time. Like
really?
He was doing what he loved doing, which is just being on his tractor. Yeah.
See, I like that. And I mean, yeah, it's work. And I was thinking this when Adam, when you were talking about coming home and stepping in a puddle and or in the mud and going to get wood, it's like you're busy, yes, but you're busy doing things that are more fulfilling than before.
Yeah. I mean, it would definitely be a labor of love if it wasn't in the pitch black at 6 p.m. after working 10-hour day and then at a job that I hate and then driving home for an hour, you know. So
yeah, if that's brutal.
I wake up every morning at 7 o'clock and do chores for 8 hours a day on the land. That's the ultimate goal.
So yeah.
What is you guys seem like you're doing it. I mean you
seem dialed in.
You're such a talented gardener at this point, know so much. what's the workload and like the time frame like to get to where you guys, how much do you do a day? Let's say maybe from the busy time of year, which would be the nice weather time of year, through the summer when it gets really hot, and then into the winter, what does your day look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll start by saying that we have a sign outside our front door, like when you first step out, like when you're going out to do work, and it says there's nothing to accomplish. And it's like this reminder that we have, because it's easy to feel like you have to get it all done and it gets really overwhelming. And you have like this to-do list that is, you know, it's got like five or six things on it and you get like one of them done, right, in a day, because that's all there's time for. And it can get really like frustrating, right? Like you want to accomplish all this stuff, but you're just not getting there. So we put up this sign as a reminder that even if we get nothing done, but like enjoyed our time out there, like that's all that really counts. But so I still have a desk job that I work. I work 4 hours a day, just to have some income. So usually get that out of the way. In the summertime, I usually wake up around when the sun comes up and I go out and do garden chores, whatever it is. And then I come in, do my desk work. And by then it kind of feels good to sit down, actually. It's a break. And then when I'm ready to get up, it's usually lunchtime, eat lunch, and then go back out there and spend the entire afternoon doing whatever needs to be done. Come in for dinner. And then in the summer, in the height of summer, we go back out and do more work after dinner. But it doesn't feel like work, you know, you're just like putzing around doing stuff and it's all really interesting. And it's stuff that I want to be doing, right? I love plants and I love animals and I love just spending time with them. And it doesn't feel like work, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Do you feel a connection with your land yet?
Absolutely. Yeah. What about you guys?
It's getting there. We moved in and it was like 110 degrees when we moved in. Really hot summer. We had a really stressful move this time.
Yeah.
It's the last time we moved into our first house in Portland. It was like, it was so exciting and it was stressful, but we were putting a one bedroom apartment into a house. And this time we moved on our own and moved a three bedroom house into a tiny little house that's not really very usable at this point. And then
it was a downgrade.
Yeah.
In terms of the structure.
This fall was pretty, it wasn't like, that night it started raining pretty quick and we didn't get to get much stuff done out. I mean, there's a never ending amount of, like, this property will never be perfect. There's a never ending amount of cleanup to do. I really like where we live and I'm glad that we ended up way up here in the middle of nowhere in a place that we didn't know anything about Columbia County when we moved up here. And for as much as, it's way out in the middle of nowhere, it's pretty non-compliant place. So I'm really enjoying that part and we have a good sheriff and all that stuff. So for the fiasco that you've been talking about, it's better than some places we could have ended up. But I love our property. I'm just intimidated by it, I guess. It's what I'm feeling right now. And then as the springtime gets closer, it's just the same thing. But that whole never accomplish nothing. What is it? Nothing.
There's nothing to accomplish.
Yeah. There's this thing that I remember hearing that these Buddhist monks used to say. They used to have to like sweep leaves every day, and they would just talk like, you're never done. You're never done sweeping, you know. So
yeah,
you might as well enjoy the sweeping.
Yeah. So how about you?
I guess I feel connected to the parts of the land that I'm like more familiar with now, like, you know, the trees over by the chicken coop and stuff, because we literally have to go out there every day. But like, we went into the pasture that's like next to our house today, and for the first time we were able to see the river or the stream over there. Like, we had no idea kind of where it was in all of the brush, and it just reminded me like how much more there is to learn about everything. I mean, we hadn't even been able to get into the area across the road from us until last month, because it was so heavily wooded until the rain kind of and snow pushed it all down. So I don't feel familiar with our land yet. Like, I don't know where the water is coming from. It's like streaming down the road, and it's not all from the sky. It's coming out from the ground.
Yeah.
Can't figure out exactly where or how many locations it's kind of bubbling out from under. But I like living here better than I like living in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't say I feel like super connected with it all yet. I mean, we don't even know what kind of animals are living in our basement right now.
Yeah, there's mystery animals scratching on the side of our...
We think they might be weasels.
Prefabricated tub.
Wow.
Yeah, our tub is like scratchy on the bottom, like not where we stand, but under the tub, you know, and we can hear animals like scratching on that texture.
Yeah.
They're just really cozy in there.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do. I thought maybe we could try to trap them before we put new windows on, because if we trap them when in there, when we're installing the windows, then they're going to starve in there and die.
Yeah.
So we've got either a weasel issue or a raccoon issue, or what else could it possibly be?
I think there's just massive amounts of rodents in the walls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to get 2 feral cats, though. We are going through with that application thing. It's called Meow Kitten.
Doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we're getting barn cats, and we're going to put them in the basement. I want to see if there's some way that I can put them up in the attic. But
I'm scared a little, because if it's a raccoon or a weasel.
Yeah, who knows?
They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We have some noises like that behind our bathtub too.
Really?
Some like, yeah.
I wonder if the pipes stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
Shower or something, if that's why they like it.
Yeah, or like it provides an access point for them or whatever. Yeah.
It's creepy, but I'm not as scared by it anymore. I'm more just want to know who they are.
Yeah.
Do you have, I have one of those hunting cameras where you,
we don't have that.
Yeah, you should get one. They're really fun.
What kind do you have?
I can't remember. I can send you the
what have you model. Captured with it.
Yeah, what did you see?
Oh my gosh, all kinds of stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mostly used it in Portland, actually. There was a coyote den in our backyard, and there was like a coyote that had pups just right there in our backyard. So that was really fun.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
And scary.
Yeah, I guess.
We should put one of those in our basement. I think I've seen them sold at like the hardware store near us.
Yeah, we should put one of those in the basement to see what's in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that way you know what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And then I can name it.
So what... If you could describe what your land is like, how would you do that?
It's all flat. So we have about 12 acres. It used to be about 15 years ago, our neighbors tell us it used to be cow pasture. So mostly is in grass. There's a creek on the south side that borders the property, and there's some wooded area along the creek. And And there's also some wooded area where our little trailer is located. So there's some shade, but it's mostly just grass pasture.
How's the soil been since you lived there?
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. That was one of the coolest things moving here is in Portland, we had crap soil. It was basically like artist clay that we had to resurrect into garden soil. And the soil here is a well-drained loam and super deep. If you go down to the creek bed, you can see it's probably like 15 feet deep. I'm probably exaggerating.
Loam.
What's a loam?
Mm-hmm. It's like a finely textured, well-drained soil. It's about as ideal as you can get for growing stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think we have that.
I think it's probably. I
can't remember what you have.
It said, does it say it on that survey that you gave us?
Yeah, it should tell you. I can't remember what you have.
You still have that?
Yeah.
We'll check it out. I think it's going to be pretty good because we have the creek running by us. And yeah, I think it's going to be very successful.
One of the things that was surprising, though, is the soil here is so well drained that I was used to watering a clay soil, and the clay holds on to water really well. And then when we got here, I didn't adjust my watering up to account for the better drainage. And I found that some of my stuff was really thirsty, like my onions didn't get enough water at first. So I had to like start watering way more often than I did in our old garden. That was kind of a surprise.
Do you have timers set up, or were you watering by hand?
I was watering by hand. Oh, well, not by hand. I mean, we have these, they're kind of like soaker hoses, but not really. They sprinkle. So they don't like drip, but they sprinkle onto a whole bed. And so I turn that on probably, I want to say, 2 or 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not on timers. It's all like I go out there and I look to see if it needs water. If it doesn't need water, I don't water it. Just like put it on. That was like an interesting exercise. I got like one of those really long moisture meters. It's like 3 feet long. So you can like put it into the soil. You know, you can choose how deep you want to put it, up to 3 feet. So you can test like, okay, how moist is the soil, like this deep and then this deep. And
you just can adjust it by how deep you need to go by what you're testing the soil at that point. Like onions have roots that go this deep.
Yeah, like onions are shallow rooted. So you want to see, okay, what are these onions getting for water? Where's like, I don't know, like carrots are deeper rooted. So you would put that deeper down for the carrots to see how it's going.
Like complicated.
I think you could probably do it. And that helped you, that you were successful in knowing how much to water with that.
Yeah, that helped me dial in. That helped me get an understanding of like, okay, how often do I need to water this?
What are you growing? What have you grown? And is it any different than what you were able to do in your backyard in Portland? I just want everybody to know your backyard in Portland was amazing. It's probably the coolest food forest I've seen you're in city limits. It didn't really feel like it when you were in your backyard, but it was great. And there was even a 1960s bomb shelter back there too, which was pretty crazy.
But yeah, that was a pretty cool place.
Yeah, it was scary in there. What is there anything that you're able to grow now that you had trouble with in Portland, and what's been a really successful for you?
Most things seem more successful here than they did in Portland, with the exception of a very few things. But like, for example, winter squash did really well here. We got, I would say, between 300 and 400 pounds of squash. And when we planted sort of the same number of squash in Portland, we got like less than 100 pounds. So it was, yeah, a huge improvement.
Up to five times the output for the same number of seeds.
It was incredible. Yeah. Evidently they like it here.
Yeah.
What do you do with all of it?
She uses them as house decoration. They were like all over your shelves because you didn't have space for them, right?
Yeah. They do serve as decoration and doorstops and all of that. But we've been making a lot of pie. I think you guys had some of our pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
Been making a lot of pie. Usually just bake them in the oven and eat the slices, just kind of with butter and balsamic vinegar. It's really good.
So you like cut them open and then you bake them?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cut them open, slice them up, scoop out the seeds first, slice them up, put them in the oven, 400 degrees. Yeah, they're really good like that.
And then those seeds that we had, were those pumpkin seeds?
Those were seeds from one of the squash. Yeah.
Okay. So you're able to make use of all those too.
Yeah. Toast the seeds, eat them. Yeah. They're really good.
Yeah.
But cilantro was another thing that grew really well here. And I had trouble with that in Portland.
I think we had trouble with it also. I don't think that grew very well in the herb box.
Yeah. Our cilantro wasn't happy, but all the mint was.
Yeah, the mint went wild. Happy. Yeah. Let's see, what else we got? What are you doing these days? What are some of your future projects that you guys have on deck?
Our main project that's coming on board right now is building a house.
Yeah.
It looks like that's gonna get going this year, which we're super excited about. We weren't sure if we were actually gonna build it this year or at all, given the circumstances, and but it's all coming together. So
tell us about like the type of house that you're building and how you landed on that.
It's a passive solar design, so like the whole front, the whole south side of the house is going to be mostly windows. So there's like, so it captures the, you know, incoming southern sun during the winter cold days. And then the north side is mostly going to be just solid heat sink, right? So it absorbs some of the heat of the house. It's got some windows on it on the north side, but it's mostly just solid.
What's it made
of? It's made of this stuff called Faswall. It's made in Philomath, and it's a mix of, I believe it's concrete and recycled wood chips. So they turn those into these building blocks, and then they insert these wool. It's wool insulation.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's super cool. So it's not flammable. What? Yeah. So the cool thing about these blocks is that they're fireproof. So, you know, they're not flammable. Your house isn't going to burn down if there's like a wildfire or whatever.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it's really super insulative. The house we're in right now doesn't have a lot of insulation. So we're having the same problem you guys are. You know, you wake up in the morning and it's like 40 degrees.
Yeah. That's cool. When do you guys have a start date?
Not yet. We're working on it. Probably like the guy that we talked to said maybe June.
So did you guys decide on a contractor and everything like that?
We're interviewing them right now.
Who like presents well and who will actually do the work well.
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive, I don't think. You know?
Yeah,
but like I don't know. Some people interview really well, and then that's the end of that version of their personality.
Yeah.
are you speaking from experience?
Current experience, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're still waiting on our kitchen, so hopefully that gets going. Maybe next week we're gonna start. We'll see.
Most recently, though, we can't use our right sink.
Like, so the right half of our sink. We have like one of those split sinks.
Yeah.
And the right side is just leaking out of the pipe. And
oh no!
I can fix it, but it's just like, how much do I want to go fix stuff?
It's about to be torn out next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of like not feeling the connection yet. I think it's being pretty uncomfortable in our house.
Yeah, things are like about to change. And because of that, we're not able to get really settled.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's like, feel really unsettled.
Yeah.
Just because, like, we have that gigantic shop, but there's no power to it and stuff like that. Stuff that
just
get straightened out for us to feel at home.
There's solutions to everything, but we just haven't found them, but we just haven't been able to put them in action yet.
Yeah, and solutions all seem to cost money.
Yeah, and like, you know, you specifically as a human have a really hard time with clutter.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we just can't get organized when we're about to tear everything out.
Yeah,
everything's
gonna relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me, I thrive in clutter. I'm like a little mouse.
Yeah.
In a hoard.
Yeah. So what were some of the books and resources and stuff that you relied on to get to where you are too? That helped you figure out how to do it in the Pacific Northwest?
I love Steve Solomon's books. I think I've read, two of them.
And that would be Gardening West of the Cascades. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, here, I brought it. Let's see. Growing Vegetables West of the Cascades. This is my favorite book. Is it right side up there?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's your favorite one?
Yeah. This one really helps explain like how this area is unique. And especially here, we're in the Coast Range. So like, we get 90 inches of rain, right? But then the summers are bone dry. Yeah. So it's really unique.
Probably pretty similar. We're in the coast. It rains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It rains a lot in Portland, but it rains frequently in Portland, but not technically not a lot.
Yeah. It's not this level.
I think it rains a lot here.
So. Yeah.
But then you gave us another one of his books, Gardening in Hard Times, right? Is that what it's called?
Yep. Yeah. Gardening When It Counts.
Yeah,
that's a good one too.
I'm making my way through that one right now. And then who else?
I like Carol Deppe, and I don't know if her last name is Deppe or Depp. I don't know how to say it, but it's D-E-P-P-E.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got some awesome stuff out there. My favorite book from her is The Resilient Gardener. Is that what it's called? The Resilient Gardener.
Yeah.
Adam's run over to the bookshelf to look.
Here. Yeah, this one right here. We just got it after we came to visit you.
Nice. Yeah, I love that book. That has so much good information in it. And it's a good compliment to, Steve Solomon has a particular style. And he's like, this is how you have to do it. Like this, right? He's very particular. And Carol's books are more like, just sort of a higher level overview, not as detailed, but still has a lot of really good information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really cool. In the Steve Solomon book, he has those little like sidebars in each chapter, and he tells you like exactly how to make complete organic fertilizer, which is pretty cool. So I was talking with you, I think last weekend we went to Wilco and bought a bunch of stuff. So
yeah,
hopefully
that's been so that's been a really important piece of what we've done with our garden, is using his recipe to remineralize the soil, because I feel like he's got some like micronutrients in there that without it, you'd probably grow pretty good vegetables. But if you level up the nutrition into the soil, the plants that you eat are going to have higher nutrition too. And I feel like that was a key piece, particularly because it rains a lot here and there's a lot of leaching during the winter. So you have to replenish a lot of those nutrients during the summer.
This might be kind of a silly question, but I never really thought about it until right now. If you have two heads of lettuce that look identical, could one of them be higher in nutrition than the other one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the key would be the taste. Like, I feel like our taste buds know, like, you know, you might eat some supermarket lettuce and it's kind of bland and it's like, yeah, whatever, lettuce. But then you eat some homegrown lettuce from a garden that's been remineralized, right? And you might be like, oh my God, this is the most amazing lettuce I've ever eaten. And I think that difference is probably the higher nutrition.
What about if you have two raised beds of soil with the identical soil in them, but one has been remineralized and you grow the same type of lettuce in both and they look the same? Would the ones that grew from the soil that's been remineralized be a lot higher in nutrition?
Yeah.
And would taste different?
I don't know. This is my hypothesis, but you should totally do that experiment. Yeah. You should grow two different beds next to each other. Do that to one, leave the other as is and see what you get. That would be such a great little experiment to do. See if any of it tastes different.
That'd be so cool. Maybe we could make some like decorative raised test beds, like out in front of the house or something.
Yeah, that'd be super cool.
Use those and try to start doing all sorts of nutritious, delicious experiments.
Whoa. I really like lavender, and I feel like that would be a fun thing to experiment with too, because I want to grow lavender all around the house.
Mm-hmm.
All different types of lavender, so it would be fun. We could experiment with that too.
That sounds like a blast.
Are you making fun of me?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were on board.
Is there anything?
I think that's great.
Is there anything that you guys are going to do this year that you haven't tried out yet when the planting season comes around?
I planted some einkorn wheat this fall. So it got its head start. It's like about this tall right now. And then, you know, it'll finish growing in the spring and summer. So that'll be a fun new experiment. I've never grown that before.
Yeah.
And you've made your own flour from wheat before, correct?
Yes, but not homegrown wheat, like store-bought wheat. Yeah.
Okay. And then you just made, you mill flour?
Yeah, we've got this like hand grinder mill.
Yeah. But you've made corn flour.
From your own corn. Yes.
Out of corn that you grew. And that's what you gave us when we were there, right?
Yep.
Okay. So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a flower corn. It's actually one of the varieties that Carol developed. I think it's called Magic Mana. I don't know how to say that word. There's a lot I don't know how to say. But
because you read or you experience it by yourself and you never hear anybody else say it out loud.
I call it my ease.
Oh, I love that.
But yeah, that's one of her varieties. And it's what we've been growing for the past few years. It's been amazing. Yeah, it makes such delicious cornbread.
Yeah, you guys made the pancake out of?
They're called flapjacks. You guys keep calling them corn pancakes. And I'm pretty sure they're called flapjacks.
Yeah, they're really good. And that's a great alternative if you're like Emily over here and you can't handle gluten.
You can't handle it emotionally. You can't handle it physically.
Yeah. Makes you angry and...
No, it makes me tired.
Okay.
Which makes me angry. Just kidding.
Yeah, and then other stuff happens too.
Yeah.
In your guts.
Yep.
I guess what else should we talk about?
That's really all the questions that we have written down. I would say, I guess, like a good beginner question that we've asked a few of our guests is like, what's a good place to start for people who don't know a lot about gardening?
I would say start small and reasonable. Do something that you feel like you can accomplish. I think if you go too big, it can get overwhelming, but if you start small, you can have a feeling of success, like, hey, I grew this and it was easy. And then from there, you can expand. That's what we've done, mm-hmm. where every year we added a little bit more space once we got comfortable growing whatever it was, and just kept adding more and more stuff.
Maybe we should start a little smaller.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool seeing what you guys did, because you got all that big plot of land prepared from the guy at the tractor, but you didn't use it all your first year.
Yeah.
So maybe we could till out and get it all prepared, everything that we have marked out this year, but not feel like the need to. Maybe we'll use half of it or something like that.
Totally, and you can grow cover crops in the other half.
Yeah,
to improve.
That's a great idea.
We both work more than 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
Take into consideration driving.
Yeah.
And then expecting ourselves to be able to do as much as Sylvia does is just unreasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if we didn't work as much, it would still be unreasonable to try to be as good a gardener as Sylvia. Like,
yeah.
We've been somewhat successful in a suburban backyard one time, pretty much.
Right.
So,
but it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that,
I think that's important, is keep it at the level of fun where you're not feeling like, oh my God, this is a drag. It's overrun with weeds and now I have to spend my entire weekend out there with a headlamp weeding it.
Yeah. Headlamp. I've definitely felt that about weeding. I can hear some coyotes outside.
Is that at your house?
No, it's right here. Really going for it.
It sounds outside. Like Bigfoot, kind of.
Yeah, could be Bigfoot too. But yeah, for us, we just started, our backyard was trashed when we moved in. And
at our old house?
I spent the first summer and year getting it all prepped up and ready to go. And then the second year I had planter boxes and everything, and we were really, really successful in a suburban backyard. We had more food than we could eat during the summer. We just didn't plan it out properly and figure out how to time everything right.
We had all the lettuce at the same time.
Yeah. So that's something that we definitely need to work on. But yeah, I think keeping it manageable is great advice.
I feel like that's the key too, is like, as you go, you learn, right? You'll never do that again. You learn from like every year, every mistake and every success too.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any catastrophic failures?
Oh, I'm sure.
Feel better if you would explain about that.
Wait, say that again.
Yeah, that might make me feel better if you would explain those.
Oh, I'm sure I've had catastrophic failures. Okay, here's a catastrophic failure. So one year I planted a bunch of overwintering broccoli, and I planted it in a bed that previously had a bunch of parsley in it. And the parsley had gone to seed and all the seed dropped, and they all germinated. Right. So there was this carpet of parsley and there was this nice overwintering broccoli in there, but neither of them turned into anything, because what I should have done was weed out all the parsley. Right. But it got so weedy that neither the parsley produced anything nor the broccoli didn't amount to anything either. It ended up being duck food. So just
had duck food. So yeah. Not a huge failure.
I guess there's a silver lining to it. The ducks were very happy to eat broccoli leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had like a lot of our stuff at the old place bolted because it got so hot in the backyard. And man, those coyotes are really going.
There's a coyote fight. I think I'm going to go. You guys continue.
Okay. Yeah. Are you going to go break it up?
I'm going to go get in the middle.
Yeah. But yeah, we just could always pull it and get what we could out of it, and then it could be chicken food. So
yeah, that's the cool thing about having chickens and ducks is that you can just give them the veggie scraps and they love it and they turn it into delicious eggs for you.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us about your ducks?
Oh, sure. The ducks. I love the ducks. We have 6 ducks. They are a comedy show. They're hilarious.
So much cooler than chickens. Like, they look so much cooler and they look like they have so much more personality.
They do. They all have their own personality, and together as a group, they're just like a traveling comedy show. And so we got them for eggs. And so right now we've got 5 hens and 1 male drake. We get like 4 eggs a day, which is awesome.
Even right now?
Yeah.
You use a heat lamp, or you light them up in the wintertime, right?
Yeah, we use a light. We don't put a heat lamp on them because they're so, they don't mind the cold at all.
Right.
But they do get lights because I think the egg laying is dependent on the day length.
Yeah.
Maybe we should put a light on ours.
Yeah, we're not doing too bad compared to a lot of people I've talked to for our chickens. We're getting like, on a bad day, 2, on a good day, 5.
No, bad day, 3.
Nice.
Bad day, 3, okay.
Yeah,
3 to 5 great.
Eggs a day from 11 chickens, though. We have more.
But I know a lot of people that live in warmer climates than we do, and they're getting like 0.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
When do chickens ramp up their egg production?
I think in the summer.
Springtime, as soon as it warms up and gets light out.
Like March?
Dependent, or if it's just light dependent.
Yeah, probably just light dependent. Yeah, mm-hmm. March, when it starts really, really getting brighter, I think.
They laid their first egg in August.
Yeah, but
and
we
then
had
they
gotten...
all finished after that. But that was just age. Yeah.
Yeah. But... yeah, and then you have you've got a bunch of chickens now too, right?
Yeah, we got a bunch of chickens. 4 of the chickens belong to the neighbors. We're just babysitting their chickens, and they've gone traveling for the winter. So, and then we got 7 more hens from some friends who moved to Montana, and they wanted to just drop off their chickens here at our place. So, we inherited those.
Are you babysitting, or are those yours now?
Yeah, they're ours now. They're never coming back, so.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you were babysitting 2 different flocks.
Nope, one of them was inherited entirely.
Oh, I feel like I would have looked at the chickens differently if I knew they were yours. I would have wanted to get to know them more.
Aw.
Yeah. I was going to ask about compost.
Yeah.
Like, do you use the duck waste and chicken waste in the compost bin? And if so, how do you do it? And how do you use all the compost with your gardening?
Yeah, so I treat the chicken poo and the duck poo differently. The chicken poo goes directly into the compost bin because I think it needs time to mellow out before you put it on your garden. Mm-hmm. But I believe the duck poo is not as, sharp, like burning or whatever, caustic.
Yeah. Caustic, yeah.
Because the ducks drink a lot of water, and so their poop is kind of runnier and stuff. So yeah. The duck straw, I will often put that, I'll like mulch my fruit trees with it. So I'll put that directly onto plants, not like lettuce or anything that I would eat right away, but stuff that, you know, like perennials or whatever. That where it doesn't matter that there's poop at the base.
Yeah.
Do you do it that way just because of a mental block, or do you think that it
it actually affect the food?
That's a good question.
Because I don't have an issue with it, and I'm doing that food forest abundance thing, and we're doing all these webinars and stuff, and they had a composting one, and they talked about humanure.
Human manure?
Yeah. And I asked the guy that was doing the presentation if they just used it on fruit trees and perennials and stuff like that. Same question I just asked you. And somebody in the chat said that it was just a mental block that it could be used on.
I have safe, a mental block.
Safely on lettuce and things like that.
I have a mental block.
Yeah. First, I think for me, some of it is a mental block. And some of it is, I think there are things that I would try on my own, but I would never feed it to other people, nor tell other people that they should do it, right? Like
that you're doing it.
What's that?
Would you tell other people you were doing it, or would you keep that a secret?
Depends on who it is. If it's somebody who's like gonna go be reckless with it, I probably wouldn't tell them. Like, here's an example. I put some duck straw on some leeks that I had and some garlic. But both of those things get cooked. Like, I don't eat raw leeks. So
yeah,
I feel comfortable with it touching. You know what I mean?
Human manure.
I've never tried that. And I don't think that I would. I think for the humanure, I would have to experiment a little bit and come around to it. I don't think I would put that directly on my veggies, but I know people do. And I know that a lot of people say that it's fine. For me, I think it would be a mental block, but it's something.
It would have to be like really, really raving reviews for me to even hear it. But if it's just fine, then I'm like, why would I?
Yeah. It's a cool concept, because there's all this waste that we wash into the sewer in the septic system, right? Like,
are you guys on?
They septic? Are nutrients. Yeah, we're on septic. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was thinking, since we only have one bathroom, that we could at some point put in a second, just a small little bathroom with a shower, and be able to do a composting toilet or something like that.
Stand up shower, and then
just a safe space, and not have it be some big over the top master bathroom with a sauna tub and stuff like that. But just
also, they have cool toilets where you wash your hands and then that gray water goes into the toilet tank.
Ooh, very cool.
That's good.
So you're not wasting it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, because like washing stuff down with just like drinking water, it just doesn't make that much sense.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of.
Well, yeah, I've got a couple more good ones.
Oh, okay. There you go.
What motivates you?
Ooh.
What motivates me?
Yeah.
Who, me?
Can you narrow down the question? What motivates me just in general, or like with gardening, or
what motivates you to be self-sufficient?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be a nice answer. You can be mean about it too.
I don't think she's capable of that.
I know we have similar political ideology, but you would probably explain your ideology in a lot kinder way than I would.
Yeah. Get my thoughts together here on that one. I want to be self-sufficient because on some level, I think the industrial food system is garbage. Like, the stuff that you get at the grocery store is mostly garbage that I wouldn't want to eat. And I value my health and I value my body, and I wanna eat things that are helpful and nutritious and promote health. And I think that I can do that much better than anything I buy from like the industrial food system. And the other reason I wanna be self-sufficient is because the more I rely on myself to do things for myself, the less I need from a society that I'm not sure I really want to participate in. And at this point, I'm getting some interesting messages from that society that they might not want me to participate in it either, based on my ideologies. So the more I do for myself, the less I have to rely on those industrial systems to live, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. 100%. I think it's a lot to think about right now. It's like, I think physical health is more important for people like us now more than ever, because we might not be able to rely on the medical industrial complex for help that we've relied on or that we've needed in the past, you know. Mm-hmm. A couple things, right? So
yeah, and the more I learn about that medical industrial complex, actually the less I want anything to do with it either.
Yeah we're on the same page. Let's see, what was the last one that I was gonna ask? I think those are, I just want to let you know that you guys were so inspirational to us. Like, you guys had your little piece of land, I think, bought when we first met you, and you were just waiting to sell your house to get out there. And I think you were the first people that we saw that actually did it. There's a whole bunch of people in like the freedom and liberty scene who talk about what you did and are never ever going to do it. A lot of people that want to be talk about being off the grid and have no clue what that means. And I know that we've both seen it, that as soon as we got property, people started asking us if they could come live on our property instead of going in and finding their own thing, you know. And just seeing that you guys are doing it, and it really inspired us. I wish that we could both switch to part-time and just
part-time stay-at-home jobs.
Yeah, but
not have to commute.
I think we're gonna figure it out, and we're just so happy that we get to know you guys. And we don't have very many friends that are like married couples that we both want to go hang out with. And it was really a really great Christmas this year with you guys.
It was a merry Christmas.
It was really, yes. Really, really, really nice. We didn't do anything special. We just hung out in your little trailer, which was way cozier than our house. So much, much warmer than what we have here. And we're just really thankful for you guys. We love you guys a lot. So.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Same goes for you. I feel that same level of respect when we first met. You guys are the kind of people who walk their talk. And I think that that's really, I have a lot of respect for that. Yeah. And yeah, we really enjoy hanging out with you guys. And I just wish that you lived a little closer.
I know. Then we could really learn from you.
Yeah.
We could just spy on everything you do.
I think if we lived closer to you, you'd start getting annoyed with us probably.
I don't think so.
But
well, we could be like sous chefs.
Yeah, we could be like, so you could be the chief and we could be the... We wouldn't even have to have our place. We could come live on your property.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
Just set up a tent, right?
Yeah.
Well, do you have any final words of wisdom for anybody, or do you think you're okay with where we've ended up?
Oh, I feel like this was a good conversation. Yeah. I guess I just want to say to anybody who's thinking of doing what you guys have done, to do it. It's doable. and there are people to support you along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not always going to be super comfortable, but.
But we've become more resilient to the cold, because the other day it was like low 50s, high 40s.
Yeah,
it was tropical.
Yeah, yesterday.
We were in
a
tropical
paradise. Yesterday it was 50 in Portland. I came up out of the basement at work, and I was like, man, it feels good. It was like pouring rain and 50 degrees. I'm like, man, I feel like I'm at the on
resort.
The beach.
It's all relative, huh?
Body gets used to it. You
yeah.
acclimate, and all the things that we thought we needed, we, you know, either forgot about or realized we don't need. You know?
Yeah. And then the great
cool.
thing about we're in the depths of it in Oregon right now. It's
yeah.
It affects everybody pretty.
The dark.
Even, yeah, just the dark and the gray and the rain, but we're really rewarded for it come like late spring and
mm-hmm.
early summer, you know. So
yeah,
it get and then it'll get to be like Satan's front porch here during the middle of the summer, and we'll be like, man, I can't wait for it to start. I can't wait for it to start raining again. It's so hot. But okay,
those days seem so far away right now, those hot
yeah.
100 degree days.
Yeah,
yeah. But we're going to make a little beach at our house by the creek.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you guys should come stay in the RV MTV cribs and hang out at the beach with us.
I definitely will. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And we can't wait to come down and see what you guys have going on. We'll have to come down for a getaway for a day during when the weather gets better and we can see what you guys are getting ready. We'll come down and work on your land for a day.
Awesome. That sounds great.
Give us dinner and sourdough bread.
And tea.
Yeah. But I think that we should wrap it up there, Sylvia. And yeah, we're just really thankful for you guys. So we really,
yeah.
I don't say that very many people.
Thanks, Adam. Same for you too. Yeah. I feel really grateful for both of you.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, we'll talk to
you guys.
Sounds good. All right.
All right.
Thanks for everything. All right. Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.